You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, July 30th, 2026. A matter of trust. Variations in crude oil quality make on-spec delivery critical for global refiners. Published by Liz Dickin. Crude oil, often mistakenly described as a single, standardized commodity, is anything but uniform. Every stream has its own chemical fingerprint, including differences in density, sulfur content, and a host of other qualities. Those variations can have real consequences for refiners, traders, and the folks who move the stuff around. In today's RBN blog, we'll dig into why crude quality matters and how it can make a real difference to the bottom line. Let's start with the basics. Crude quality is often measured by two main traits, density and sulfur content. Density is measured using API gravity, indicated in degrees. A higher API number means lighter crude, while a lower API number indicates the opposite. In general, crude oils above about 35 degrees API are considered light. Those between roughly 25 degrees and 35 degrees API fall into the medium category, and anything lower is heavy. A crude's density matters because it affects what refiners can make from each barrel. Lighter crudes produce higher yields of valuable refined products such as gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel with relatively less processing. Heavier crudes have larger hydrocarbon molecules that need more complex refining units, such as cokers and hydrocrackers, to produce high yields of gasoline, jet fuel, and diesel. That extra processing adds cost. The other major quality marker is sulfur content, which divides crude into the familiar categories of sweet and sour. Sweet crude has relatively little sulfur, typically less than 0.5%, while sour crude contains more than 0.5%. For reference, the spec for domestic sweet, the standard grade deliverable against the NYMEX WTI futures contract, is less than or equal to 0.42% sulfur. However, as global fuel standards have tightened, most sweet crudes still have too much sulfur to meet finished product specifications without hydrotreating. As a result, the sweet-sour differential has narrowed over the past several decades. But density and sulfur only tell part of the story. Other chemical traits also influence how crude runs in a refinery and what it's worth, including. Number 1. Distillation is arguably the most important measure of crude quality. A crude oil distillation curve shows how much crude is vaporized, recovered as liquid, as you gradually raise the temperatures. It is one of the most important tools refiners use to evaluate a crude oil's quality and determine the products it can yield. A crude's API number is often a helpful indicator of its expected distillation results, but there are exceptions. Some heavier crudes, especially those that are paraffinic and waxy, may have lower API gravity but still produce higher yields of valuable middle distillates because of their hydrocarbon composition. Number 2. The molecule types prevalent in crude oil, paraffins, isoparaffins, naphthenes, and aromatics, play a big role in how that oil behaves in a refinery and how easy, or difficult, it is to turn into finished products. For example, in the jet diesel range, aromatic and naphthenic crudes produce the material with the best cold flow properties, but perform poorly in terms of cetane, a diesel fuel's ignition quality, and smoke point, a measure of a jet fuel's tendency to produce soot or smoke during combustion. Number 3. Conradson carbon, or concarbon, or microcarbon residue, or MCR, is the most important property of the resid VTB cut, since it is the primary determinant of how this material behaves in a coker unit. VTB stands for vacuum tower bottoms, also referred to as vacuum residue. Number 4. Total acid number, or TAN, measures the presence of naphthenic acids in crude oil. Crudes with elevated TAN levels can increase the risk of corrosion in refinery equipment, especially at high temperatures. Number 5. Metals content is another crucial factor. Trace metals such as nickel and vanadium can poison catalysts used in refining processes, shortening catalyst life and raising operational costs. Elevated iron levels can create problems across the value chain. Iron particles, which can behave like gritty sand in a machine, are abrasive and can contribute to plugging, equipment wear and corrosion, gradually eroding pipeline components and reducing efficient flows. Higher iron concentrations can also increase sediment and other contaminants in crude, potentially lowering its quality and market value. If these metals reach refineries, they can create additional processing challenges, including catalyst poisoning, particularly in fluid catalytic cracking, or FCC units. Number 6. Mercaptans, also known as thiols, are sulfur-containing compounds found in crude oil that present significant corrosion, safety, and refining challenges, CO Captain Mercaptan. Their highly reactive and corrosive nature can damage metal surfaces, leading to sulfide stress cracking, hydrogen-induced cracking, and accelerated corrosion in pipelines, storage tanks, and refining equipment. They also pose serious health and safety risks due to their toxicity. Historically, crude oil characteristics stay behind the scenes, quietly shaping refinery economics and crude differentials. Crude quality has always mattered, but it has moved even more into the spotlight in recent years. To understand why, we're going to focus today on West Texas Intermediate, or WTI, the U.S. benchmark produced in the Permian Basin of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. It is a light, sweet crude, around 42 degrees API, with sulfur levels near or below 0.2%. Note, before the shale revolution, these were closer to 39 degrees API and 0.35% sulfur. Those characteristics have long helped support its role as one of the world's most widely traded benchmark grades. Before the lifting of the ban on most U.S. crude oil exports in December 2015, a lot of Permian crude went to complex Gulf Coast refineries that could better tolerate contaminants. Robust quality control and commercial infrastructure developed around Midland cargoes as they became a bigger part of the global market. Its importance increased significantly when S&P Global Platts began reflecting WTI Midland in its dated Brent assessment starting with its June 2023 cargo deliveries. See Do You Believe in Brent After WTI? This means the North Sea Brent basket now includes Brent, Forties, Ekofisk, Osberg, Troll, and WTI Midland. The purpose of adding WTI was largely to add liquidity and physical volume to the Brent complex as North Sea production declined, and came with explicit quality standards. The move put a brighter spotlight on WTI, and Midland has set the dated Brent benchmark more than half the time since late 2023, putting greater emphasis on potential quality issues with WTI. The issue is not that foreign refiners are unable to filter out contaminants. Rather, the concern is that WTI Midland is priced and traded as a light, sweet, low-metal crude, and benchmark cargoes need to remain fungible and predictable. Elevated iron, nickel, vanadium, sulfur, basic sediment and water, or other contaminants can affect refinery operations, catalyst performance and crude unit reliability, all of which affect the value of the crude relative to what the buyer expected. That makes terminal segregation, blending controls, pipeline origin requirements, testing and documentation critically important. Recent quality scrutiny around WTI has focused on metals. Intercontinental Exchanges, or ICE, Midland WTI HOU specification, which aligns with Midland WTI deliverable into the Brent complex, calls for crude oil with 0.2% max sulfur and 40 degrees minus 44 degrees API, along with limits of 10 mg per kg of iron, 2 mg per kg of nickel, and 2 mg per kg of vanadium. Reuters reported in late 2023 that additional quality checks followed concerns over elevated metals in some WTI Midland export cargoes, while Platts said it had found only one out-of-spec cargo among 54 trades reviewed at that time. Reuters also reported an out-of-spec WTI Midland batch earlier in 2023. In our next blog in this miniseries, we'll look at why crude quality has become more difficult to ensure and some of the steps taken to address the issue. Not all crude oil is created equally, and even small differences can have major impacts on refinery economics, trading, and global benchmark pricing. A question that has become a hot topic recently still remains: have quality concerns become more prevalent naturally, or are we only seeing more chinks in the armor due to added scrutiny caused by WTI's inclusion in the Brent benchmark? As changing market dynamics, evolving blending practices and stricter quality standards reshape crude flows, the answer is more nuanced than it appears. A Matter of Trust was written by Billy Joel and appears as the third song on side one of his 10th studio album, The Bridge. Released as the second single from the album in July 1986, A Matter of Trust went to number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles chart. Personnel on the record were Billy Joel, lead, backing vocals, guitar, acoustic piano, synthesizer, David Brown and Russell Javers, guitar, Doug Stegmeier bass, Liberty DeVito, drums, and Jeff Bova, synthesizer. The Bridge was recorded in 1985-86 at the Power Station, Chelsea Sound, and RCA Studios in New York City and Evergreen Studios in Burbank, California. Produced by Phil Ramone, the album was released in July 1986. It went to number 7 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart, and has been certified 2X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. Four singles were released from the LP. Billy Joel is an American singer, songwriter, and pianist. Nicknamed the Piano Man after his 1973 hit single of the same name, Joel has had a successful career as a solo artist since the early 1970s. Born in the Bronx, Joel started playing piano at 4. He began his professional career playing piano bars while still in high school. His first rock band, The Hassles, made 2 albums for United Artists Records in 1967. Joel left The Hassles in 1969 and formed the duo Attila, which released 1 LP in 1970. He released his first solo album, Cold Spring Harbor, in 1971. Joel has released 13 studio albums, 7 live albums, 19 compilation albums and 62 singles, and has sold more than 150 million records worldwide. He has won an American Music Award, 5 Brit Awards, 6 Grammy Awards and a Tony Award, and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1999. Joel, dealing with medical issues, made his last concert appearance at the Mohegan Sun Arena in Uncasville, Connecticut, in February 2025. His last release was the single Turn the Lights Back On, which dropped in February 2024.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.